Hey, welcome to Word Magazine. This is Jeff Riddle, pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. Today is Sunday, March 25 of 2018. For this episode of Word Magazine, we're going to do something a little bit different. I know a lot of times I do works on text criticism and things like that, but I'm actually sitting right now in the, we could call it the sanctuary, the worship space, whatever it is, the meeting room of Christ Reformed Baptist Church, and we just completed our second worship service of the day, our afternoon worship service, and I'm sitting here with two men from Christ Reformed, with Ethan McGonigal. Say hello, Ethan.
Hello.
And with Jason Anderson. Say hello, Jason.
Hello there.
And we are going to have a brief discussion on a booklet that we just produced. The booklet is titled Of Effectual Calling, and it has as a subtitle Keach Conference Papers. And this is a little booklet that I put together that has the lectures that were given, or the talks or messages that were given at the 2016 Keach Conference, which is the annual theology conference of the Reformed Baptist Fellowship of Virginia. And I thought I would just have the discussion with these men and allow them to maybe just ask me some questions about the book or the project. So with that introduction, I'll turn it over to one of them if they want to ask a question.
Hello, Pastor Riddle. I'm Jason. Appreciate you inviting me here today. I believe this is the first doctrine that's been covered by the Keach Conference in this type of form, in a booklet form. Can you give us an idea of how this came about and why you decided to compile this in booklet form?
Yeah, well, I mean, the Keach Conference has been going on for quite a while, and we started back, I guess, 11 years ago. We started looking at the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith, and we started making the theme of each annual meeting be connected with the doctrines in order. So we started the first year, 11 years ago, whatever it was, with the doctrine of Scripture, and then the next year was on the doctrine of God, and so forth. And it just so happened in 2016, we had made it up to chapter 10, which is the doctrine of effectual calling. And ordinarily, you know, it had just been, you know, the messages were given, and we put them on sermonaudio.com, and people listened to them. But I just sort of had the idea, even before we had the meeting, that, you know, it might be interesting to put these in a written form. And actually, from time to time in the Reformed Baptist Trumpet, our e-journal, I had occasionally asked the speakers at the conference to give me a manuscript or their notes, and I edited a little bit and made an article out of it. But anyway, I thought it might be interesting just to take the four messages. And then when we had the conference, I really thought that the messages all seemed to be well received. There were four different men who presented the four sermons, and it seemed that the congregation that was there seemed to receive the messages well. It seemed to be, you know, an edifying time. And I thought it might be encouraging for other people to be able to read the messages. And of course, when you read something, it's different than, you know, it's different than hearing it. I know sometimes I'll preach a sermon and I'll think I had good liberty in preaching, or, you know, I'll feel like it was an effective sermon. And, you know, maybe a year later, I might read my notes and I'm like, ugh, you know, how did I preach a sermon from this? It doesn't seem like it's very coherently said, you know, put together. But anyways, I know there's a different experience between listening to preaching versus hearing, versus reading a sermon manuscript or an edited sermon manuscript. But anyways, I thought it might be helpful. And there's certainly, you know, obviously in Christian history, there's a tradition, obviously, of writing down, having manuscripts of sermons. One thinks of Spurgeon and so many of his sermons that were, you know, written down, edited, and published, and so forth.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right, well, I appreciate that. Also, do you think you could give us a brief overview of the messages contained in the book?
Yeah, well, you know, the chapter 10 in the Second London Baptist Confession, as in the Westminster Confession of Faith, has four distinct paragraphs or sections. And so we had four sermons that were given in the conference, and each of them was preached by a different minister. And so the first session was on paragraph one, and the message was by Steve Clevenger, who's the pastor of Covenant Reformed Baptist Church in Warrenton, Virginia. The second message relating to the second paragraph was by Lee McKinnon, who's a pastor of Covenant Reformed Baptist Church, which is in Bluefield, West Virginia. And then the third message was mine. I was the speaker, and it was on the third paragraph. And then the fourth message and concluding message was on paragraph four, and that was from Andy Rice, who's the pastor of Providence Baptist Church in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Should have given the titles, I guess. Chapter one, Steve's, was Effectual Calling and Regeneration. Chapter two, Lee McKinnon, we put it under the theme of Effectual Calling and Spiritual Ability, or Spiritual Inability, maybe be better to say. The message I gave was Effectual Calling and Elect Infants, the one that deals with what about infants who die, what about the mentally disabled, developmentally disabled, can they be objects of the effectual calling? And then the fourth chapter was Andy Rice's, which is Effectual Calling and Reprobation. Obviously, not how looking at how effectual calling not only relates to the elect, but also to the non-elect, to the reprobate. So those were that's an overview of the four paragraphs in chapter 10 of the Second London Confession, and also to the four messages that make up this booklet from the conference messages.
All right. Well, let me ask you this then. Do you see this as a doctrine to be emphasized in, as one preaches the Word of God today?
Well, I mean, obviously, as a confessional Reformed Baptist, I would say that all the doctrines that are highlighted in the confession are important doctrines. I mean, we did not choose this particular theme of effectual calling out of any kind of contemporary interest in it per se, although I think it's always relevant. The subject is always relevant. But as I said, it was more because it was kind of next man up. You know, here's the next doctrine that we want to address. And, you know, there is a coherence within the confession. You know, the previous chapter nine, is on free will. And then, you know, appropriately enough, you know, the next chapter relates to the doctrine of effectual calling. And so although there wasn't kind of any kind of contemporary pressing relevance, I think it's always relevant to understand effectual calling as, you know, part of the biblical understanding of the order of salvation, the doctrine of salvation. So, you know, I think it's perennially significant, I think.
Okay. All right. Well, kind of as a follow-up to that, what are the consequences do you see if one ignores or downplays the doctrine, such as, you know, I believe it's not something we feel like we need to emphasize to the congregation, we don't want to get too deep into matters such as this. What are the consequences of doing that?
Well, I mean, I don't think this is the kind of subject, I mean, I don't think this is the type of subject that would be perceived by most people as being esoteric or being irrelevant or being, you know, too mysterious or deep. And by the way, I mean, this little booklet, you know, it's a small little booklet. It's not really, it's not pitched at an academic audience. It's written at a popular level. You know, we had Dr. Crampton, who is part of the Reformed Baptist Church in Richmond and is a research professor at Whitfield Theological Seminary, read through the booklet and give us his feedback on it. And I put a little blurb from him on the back of the booklet. And I think he did a good job of describing the booklet in a short space, and also the relevance of the doctrine. But he said, the doctrine of effectual calling is an essential tenet to assert for those who aver to the Calvinistic soteriology expounded in the Bible. He says, the subject matter is somewhat daunting to many students, but the four contributors simplify it without doing it injustice to the point where even the less studious reader will be able to understand what the Word of God teaches regarding this doctrine. And he gives a commendation on the work. So I think he said, well, we're trying to put in a popular, simple way an exposition of this doctrine of effectual calling. And it's important because, you know, it's related to the Calvinistic doctrine of salvation, to soteriology. It's important because it stresses, you know, what happens and the importance of the preaching of the word, and how God uses not only the external call, but also how that if someone is saved, it's because of the internal call. It's because of the effectual calling of God. And so I think, you know, those who are committed to the doctrines of grace will obviously see the benefit and the value of understanding this doctrine better. Yeah.
So would you say then that one of the consequences then of downplaying a doctrine such as this would be possibly, you know, having in mind a salvation by works type of mentality versus knowing that it's God that's doing the working within you?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely. This would be a good anecdote to all forms of Arminianism. You know, to reflect on scriptural proof texts and exposition of a biblical doctrine that stresses that salvation is from beginning to end a work of God, that it is a monergistic work of God. Steve Clevenger does, I think, a good job in the very first chapter talking about how the doctrine of effectual calling is intimately related with the doctrine of regeneration. And so there's a lot in that initial paragraph that Steve does a good job, I think, of pulling out. That connects effectual calling with regeneration. I don't think they're synonymous, but they're related doctrines. It's when one receives the effectual calling that he experiences or she experiences regeneration. And so, obviously, this is going to be red meat for someone who's committed to the doctrines of grace. Yeah,
I appreciate that.
Right. Ethan McGonigal here. I have a couple questions about the content of the book. So you specifically, Pastor Riddle, did the sermon on elect infants,
yeah,
which is a pretty difficult thing to talk about, I'm sure. I know that a lot of people, especially in this current day, probably have some pretty strong feelings about that. There's a lot of hot button issues in the country right now, especially about abortion and things like that, infants who are dying, and even just infants who die when they're young because of illness and things like that. And so did you have any kind of preconceived opinions before you began studying for the sermon? Was it difficult to study for it? And when you were done studying for it and after you did the sermon, do you feel like maybe your opinions changed or you were enlightened in some way that you weren't before? How did that go for you?
Well, I mean, I don't know if you know this, but when we did that conference in 2016, we actually had invited a minister, an outside minister, to come and speak at the conference, and he was supposed to do two of the messages, and he was in a car accident. And so about a month before the conference, he called us literally from the hospital and said, I'm not going to be able to make it. And we were like, come on, you loser, get up. You know, no. We were like, we completely understand. But anyways, so Steve Clevenger took the message on paragraph one on regeneration, and I took the message on paragraph three on effectual calling and elect infants.
So he was going to do that one originally.
He was going to do the messages on paragraph one and paragraph three.
Okay.
And so Steve and I ended up stepping in and doing it, mm-hmm. doing those messages instead. But I was excited to do this one because, I mean, it's one of those kind of things, you know, it's like a college dorm room bull session, you know, conversation. You know, what happens to infants who die? Do they go to heaven?
Do they are they immediately among the are they does this show they're among the reprobate? And so it's kind of an intriguing topic. It's an intriguing question, and so I was interested in it. And it's interesting because there is a lot of, I think, in evangelical circles, a lot of sentimentality about such things. And there's also often this concept that all infants, they're innocent.
Yes.
And there's a sense in which, yes, they have not committed actual transgressions, but from an Augustinian perspective, we can't say anybody's innocent, right? They're
inherited sin.
They have, original sin, and they're deserving of God's wrath and judgment. And, if that were not the case, then no infants would ever die.
Right.
But on the other hand, we believe God is gracious and merciful, and the way the confession addresses this in paragraph 3 is kind of notoriously noncommittal. I mean, it says, this is paragraph 3, elect infants dying in infancy are regenerated and saved by Christ through the Spirit, who worketh when and where and how he pleases. So also are all elect persons who are incapable of being outwardly called by the ministry of the word. But what I'm struck by here is that when I say it's notoriously noncommittal, when it says elect infants are regenerate, well, yes, but that doesn't really answer the question. Are all infants who die among the elect or not? And you get various answers to that, and you've had various answers that have been given to that down through the years. Spurgeon notoriously said he believed that all infants who die are among the elect. And it just so happened I had read a blog post some time back that was co-written by Al Mohler and Danny Aiken, two Southern Baptist seminary professors who had discussed this. And they took basically the Spurgeon-type position and they were offering this as comfort. And it might not surprise you to find that I wasn't totally convinced by that, but I did want to think about it a little bit. So I was really glad to have the opportunity to do the message, and the message that I gave seemed to be pretty well received by the people who were there at the time, and then to be able to take the manuscript and put it in a article form for this booklet. I hope that might be encouraging for other people to read.
And do you feel like your opinions changed while studying, or maybe that you didn't have strong opinions before, and those solidified during your study?
Yeah, I think my opinions did change because, one of the things is, as I studied, and this is in the article and also in the message, that I realized that there are some polemical aspects to the paragraph 3. It's almost verbatim with the Westminster Confession of Faith, except for the proof text. And I think the Baptist framers of the confession changed the proof text because they did not want anyone to think that there might be infants who would be saved among the elect because they were part of covenant Christian families.
Right.
So they took out some of the proof text related to that. And I think they wanted to stress that if the elect infants and mental invalids were saved, it was only because of the grace of God. But the other thing, which is a bit intriguing, and I think I've told you before, Ethan, that when I'm preaching and if I'm trying to interpret a passage, I think this is the right interpretation, I always check commentaries. I usually do my own study first, and I check commentaries. And if, let's say, there's a passage and I come up with, I think this is the explanation, but then I look at Matthew Poole and I look at Matthew Henry and I read John Calvin, if I can't find my interpretation, that usually worries me, because I think, is this a novel interpretation? I don't want to present something that is novel. I want to find somebody from the Christian past who has made that argument, who's made that point. So one of the things that I came across in this, and again, it's just a brief little sermon manuscript, was I was contemplating the possibility that elect infants and mental mentally disabled people that in some way we can't perceive that they do actually receive the effectual call and respond to it in faith. And I'm not saying I see a lot of biblical evidence. I drew up one parallel to the Old Testament saints who believe without before the coming of Christ and before the crucifixion. And I did actually find Sam Waldron in his Modern Exposition of the 1689 in the section on elect infants, I think, says a few things that lend me to think that he has thought along these terms also. But I do think as I point out in the little article in the sermon on which it was based, I think we do on this topic, we have to approach it carefully, humbly, hesitantly, because we're talking about things where we don't have clear biblical warrant.
Right.
And we want to be careful about going beyond what is written and getting into, you know, speculations. I was really interested in doing the study and just thinking about this topic. Right. So, and I hope it might be helpful to, you know, other people. I gave a little personal anecdote at the end about the fact that, you know, my wife and I experienced a miscarriage right. before we had our first child. We lost a child. And at the time, you know, it was very, you know, grievous, painful. And I said it was probably that pain was only relieved until our firstborn child, whom you know, my daughter Hannah, was born. But I was trying to think, I mentioned in there, what kind of comfort would I want? What kind of comfort did I want at the time? And I said, I don't think that I would have been comforted at that time. And that was, you know, 25 years ago that happened. We were missionaries in Hungary. When my wife had a miscarriage and we were living in Budapest. But I don't think I would have been comforted by someone coming and saying, oh, you know, your child is in heaven now. I'd be more comforted by someone coming and saying, God is sovereign, God is good, and, you know, all this will work out for his glory and for your good. You know, kind of a Romans 8:28.
Right.
You know, I think this is a topic that has, you know, this is a place where the 1689 Confession has a lot of pastoral relevance. And I don't think it's surprising that it appears in the Westminster Confession of Faith and in the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith, because this was an age when there was high infant mortality and people dealt with a lot of loss. And these were questions people had. What about my child who's died? What about my, you know, my mentally disabled child and so forth.
Right. Okay. Question. So in the second sermon is Lee McKinnon, and he's talking about spiritual ability, or what he also says he'd almost rather talk about spiritual inability. And, you know, so people are spiritually unable to receive Christ of their own volition. And so I just wondered, you know, when we talk about what he talks about spiritual inability, would you consider that the same thing as total depravity, or is that a different thing? And how closely linked do you think are those two doctrines, total depravity and effectual calling?
Well, I mean, as he discusses in the chapter, I mean, I think you know, total depravity is related to the concept of spiritual inability, you know, because the impact of sin has been total. It has affected, you know, men's ability to reason, men's ability to think, men's ability to believe, and barriers have been put in place because of sin, and so this gets back to the necessity of there being an effectual call for salvation. You know, really, the doctrine of effectual calling is really, I think, more related to the doctrine of irresistible grace. It's showing how God, by his grace, overcomes and overwhelms sinful resistance to the gospel. But there's a sense in which what we call the five points of Calvinism or the doctrines of grace are woven through the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith view of salvation. There's no place where it lists the 5 points of Calvinism or the doctrines of grace, but they're sort of an understood, woven into the whole. And I'm preaching now, as you know, a series through the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith, slowly. And several points along the way, I've noted, you know, parallels. I mean, like we were in chapter 6 on the fall of man and the punishment thereof. And, you know, that's very much related to, that's more directly related to total depravity. It's there in this chapter on effectual calling, but also, you know, the doctrine of irresistible grace, I believe, is stressed within the chapter as well.
Okay. Just a couple quick questions to close. One is, what would be your one sort of or summary to convince somebody who maybe you have somebody or maybe somebody has a friend or an acquaintance who isn't as keen on the doctrines of grace, and maybe they say, yeah, I can't deal with effectual calling. I just can't deal with the fact that God is electing people before they even have a chance, you know, to be born. I can't deal with that. What would be your maybe they're even a professing Christian, but they still say they just can't deal with that reality. What would you think would be some? What would you say to that person? In summary.
Well, I mean, I would encourage them to read the Word, and you know, I would want to hear their alternative interpretations of some of the passages in Scripture that I believe do clearly teach these doctrines of grace. If someone were searching for answers, you know, there might be some specific, you know, chapters I would suggest they read. I might say, go read John 6, go read Romans 9. Look at the, and that, you know, there might be particular books or booklets on the doctrines of grace that I might hand them the doctrine of effectual calling or this little book on effectual calling.
Is there a specific work besides this one that you know of that's a good work on effectual calling that someone might want to check out?
Yeah, that's a good question. I told you I had a relatively short period of time to prepare to do the message that became this my article in here. But we did include in the booklet a number of the works that are cited by the various authors. And one of the ones that Steve Clevenger cited is a relatively new book by Matthew Barrett that is titled Salvation by Grace, The Case for Effectual Calling.
Okay.
That's by PNR that came out in 2013. One of the works that wasn't cited and that I haven't yet examined by a Puritan era author is Rollock's book on effectual calling, and his works are reprinted by Reformation Heritage. And I'd say, with regard to my particular article that was on elect infants, I was just reading the other day. I was reading a church history book, and the author made reference to this debate. And of course, I'm putting forward, for lack of a better word, the Augustinian view of this, based on original sin. And anyway, the author mentioned the works of Gregory of Nyssa, and I have not read it yet, but Gregory of Nyssa, one of the church fathers, apparently wrote a treatise on elect infants, or what happens to infants who die in infancy. And I've got that now on my wish list to read. So those are just some of there are. I don't think there are a lot of specific books actually on this particular topic. And even this work is not a, you know, this isn't a long scholarly exposition of the doctrine. This is a practical, you know, hopefully a practical pastoral booklet on the topic. But I think it might be encouraging to me to read further on this topic and study more on it.
Okay, great. Yeah. The only thing that I would say in closing is, it's a cool little work, nice little compilation, summary of the doctrine. Do you or any of the other fellows who did the sermons here, do you have any interest in doing more compilations like these on Keach Conference topics, or maybe all 5 points of Calvinism, perhaps doing a booklet on all five? Is there any interest there, or is that just kind of a pie in the sky?
Well, I mean, I'm interested in doing more. This, you guys know that in our church, when we had our annual meeting back in January, and we have an annual meeting every year in which we look at the year to come, and we talk about some of the things we might like to try to do. And one of the things I mentioned was the possibility of a publishing ministry of some sort. And so this is kind of the first project we've done. It's just it's a booklet. It's, you know, less than 60 pages in length. And, you know, it's meant to, you know, sometimes when I talk to people about Christian reading, they're daunted by reading, you know, somebody gives them a 200 page book and it's just overwhelming. Part of my thinking about putting this booklet together was it's short, it's brief, it's easy to read. This is something anybody can sit down and you know, who has fair competence in reading, and read in an hour or two, you know.
Sure.
And so that was part of the reason I wanted to do it. And you know, we have some ideas for some other works that we want to have, we want to put out in the future. We'll see if God opens the way to do that. You mentioned one of the things I wanted to do is do a booklet on the doctrines of grace.
Okay.
So I think that's something we're going to do. And we actually, one of the projects we want to do is, Dr. Gary Crampton has written a book on the doctrine of the Bible. That's a work that he wrote back in, I think, the early 90s. It's out of print, and he's given us permission to reprint it. And so that's something else we want to do. And you guys know there's a woman in our church who does graphic design, and she did the layout for this project. And hopefully, God willing, will help us in the other projects that we might do. You know, there's a lot of Christian books and things that are in print. But this is something for us to do on a small scale that we hope could be encouraging for people. And there is something definitely to be said for, you know, we have, you know, only one life. I messed up the saying. You have to edit this.
No.
Only one life will soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last. And you know, when you think about what are the impacts that have. What things have impacted your life spiritually? A lot of times, for many of us, it's things we've read. I know you're a fan, Jason, of J.C. Ryle.
Mm-hmm.
Ethan, you and I were talking today about John Dagg,
yeah.
And you're reading his Manual of Theology, and that's been encouraging to you. Mm-hmm. Well, those men, Ryle and Dagg, are long gone, but you're still reading their books. You're
right.
Still reading. And I don't want to have so much hubris to think that, you know, 150 years from now, somebody will be reading this little booklet on effectual calling, but who knows?
Right.
Should the Lord tarry. And, you know, maybe there are other things that godly men have written that we might be able to reprint, or contemporary. I think it's important that maybe a combination of both, reprinting some things. Obviously, we've seen through the years, haven't we, like Banner of Truth has had a huge impact through reprinting, you know, Puritan Reformed works. Our friend Lloyd Sprinkle in Harrisonburg has reprinted, you know, Baptist and Puritan and Christian works that have had some influence. I was invited to speak at a conference in Southeast Asia 2 years ago, and I was in Malaysia, and then I was in Hong Kong, and in the little church that I was in Hong Kong, I went over to the bookshelf, and there's a book. They had a book on the shelf that was published by Sprinkle Publications in Harrisonburg, Virginia, which is an hour's drive from here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of cool to see how that Lloyd's ministry there had borne that kind of fruit. And I'm not saying we necessarily can reproduce that, but maybe in some small way we might be able to contribute something encouraging through publishing some things.
Great. You have any closing comments, Jason?
No, just one last thing. How can we get a copy of this booklet?
Well, you can just pick one up. You can just pick one up at church. But if there is anybody out there who is interested in getting a copy of this booklet of Effectual Calling, the Keach Conference Papers, again, it's a short book, just less than 60 pages in length. We are giving them for a contribution of $5. And if you will email the church, info.crbc@gmail.com, and give us a mailing address, we can send you a copy. If it's a single copy, I said it's $5, but we will have to charge for the postage and mailing it to you. I've had several people order them, and what I've suggested is, you know, order five of them. And if you order five, you know, at $5 a copy, and the postage will only be about $3. But if you will send us an email to the church email address, info.crbc@gmail.com, we will get you copies of Effectual Calling.
And you can also go to the Christ Reformed Baptist Church Facebook page as well, and you can contact us on there and as well. And I administrate that page, and I'd be happy to help you in getting a copy as well. So,
gentlemen, thank you for taking time. Our families have been waiting patiently in the fellowship hall while we've been sitting in here talking. So, thank you, men, for your time today.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Bye.